Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Six cars outside. I can tell you that our waitress is left-handed and the guy sitting up at the counter weighs 215 pounds and knows how to handle himself. I know the best place to look for a gun is the cab of the gray truck outside. And at this altitude, I can run flat out for a half mile before my hands start shaking. Now, why would I know that? How can I know that and not know who I am?
Hello and welcome to the 12th episode of AI Movie Night. I'm your host, Joe Simpson, and tonight I'm lucky enough to be joined by two great guests to discuss all things Jason Bourne. Firstly, I'm joined by the co-host of the excellent AI comic pod, Rory Greenfield. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
I'm very good, thanks. Thanks for joining me again. We've talked a fair bit this week, haven't we?
We have, mate. Yeah, we talked a fair bit on our pod this week. It was great.
I really enjoyed it. I'm glad to get you on here, mate. Thank you. I'm also joined by the co-host of another equally excellent podcast, the On The Box podcast, Neil Devlin. How are you doing, mate?
How are you, Joe? It's great to be on. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thanks for coming on, mate. Obviously, I know what I tend to do is I keep a beady eye on Twitter, and I've seen you guys in a Bourne conversation lately. I could see how much you liked it and how much knowledge you had, and I just thought that's perfect for a movie night. So thanks to you both for coming on.
No problem at all.
Okay, I'm just going to start off, obviously, because there's three films we're going to look at, so I'm going to get straight into it. I'm going to start with you, please, Rory, if you can tell me. Can you remember when and where you first saw The Bourne Identity and what you thought of it at the time, please?
Yeah, I was thinking back about this. I saw a dodgy copy on one of those old, like, 11-inch box televisions. So it's probably the worst experience watching a film I can remember, actually. But I remember watching it going, this is incredible. I need to watch this again on an actual television or in a cinema screen. So, yeah, I remember being not paying it that much attention initially. And it's quite a dark film, especially at the beginning. Because it's at night where they pick him out of the water, and I remember not being able to make much out of it for a while, and then it all kicked in. I'm a massive Bourne fan, to be honest. After watching that, I remember watching the next two at the cinema and, yeah, reading all the books as well. So, yeah, I'm a big, big fan.
Do you think obviously you've got that book background. I've read one of them many years ago, but I don't remember it that well, truth be told. Does that give you any extra sort of knowledge about the character, or does it make the films any deeper for you?
It does a little, yeah. There's quite a lot of changes. I like the kind of difference in the books and the films, to be honest, because the books are a little bit slower burners, and he's always got one main adversary throughout. You know, the Jackal, who's the main adversary throughout the kind of trilogy of the books. So it's a little bit different, but yeah, it did give some good background. They did it really good justice. It's one of the best kind of book to film adaptations I've seen where both kind of stand up on their own two feet, really.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, dude. And that point you made about it, watching it on a bad, bad telly sort of thing. Yeah. I sometimes think that is one of the ultimate tests. If something can still be enjoyable when you're not watching it, yeah, in, you know, perfect conditions, that tells you how good the story must be and, you know, just how good the film it is. So it's interesting to hear that. What about yourself, Neil? Can you remember when you first saw it and what you thought of it on that first viewing?
Yeah, when you sent me through the agenda, what we were going to go through, I had to think about it. I was thinking, I think it must have been back, because the film came out in 2002. I don't think I seen it to 2003 when it was on DVD, but not really sure my age, but some people might remember a time when you rented DVDs. And I live out, yeah, if it was a foreign concept to anybody under the age of maybe 20, but I live out in the countryside, so there's not a lot to do out here. So, every weekend I would go to the movie shop and rent one movie. And I remember watching it on my PlayStation 2, because my PlayStation 2 was the first time I got a DVD player, because it came with it. I thought this was amazing, and it opens up a whole new world. So I remember getting it, and I was only about 13 or 14, so for me, it probably wouldn't have been like you guys. I wouldn't have been as in-depth watching it when I first watched it, but I'm sure ITV2 have sort of that out years to come, because I've seen it nearly every other week since. I just remember being amazed, because I was a big James Bond fan when I was about 12, 13, and this was just like James Bond on steroids for me.
Yeah.
It was like James Bond meets Mission Impossible. And for me, I just remember loving it. And then I seen the next two in the cinema because of this. But it's like, you know, one of those DVDs or movies that the first time you've seen it, one of the early ones, and it sort of sticks with you forever.
Yeah.
So for me, that it's a long lasting one. It's one that sticks in the memory, and it's probably one that influences everything I've watched since.
I've got to ask, would you mention it? And I'll ask you in a sec, Rory. One-on-one single combat, who wins, Bourne or Bond?
Does Bond do single hand combat?
it depends. I think Daniel Craig does, but I think some of Roger Moore would just get turfed, wouldn't he? Let's be honest. I think Bourne would snap Roger Moore, but that's one of the debates you sometimes see on the web, who'd win. And obviously Jack Bauer as well, the three JBs. What about yourself, Rory?
Bourne all the way, comfortably, to be honest. Yes. Each Bond as well. There's not a single one, I don't think. Early Connery was quite tough, actually, early doors, I think.
Yeah.
I know he didn't display it as much, but I think he's quite tough. But
yeah.
I think he's too quick. He's too intelligent. So yeah.
The idea of Bond combat I have is, you know, in GoldenEye when he's going around doing the judo chop.
Yeah, it always reminded me a bit of Shatner in Star Trek, a little bit like his chops, you know what I mean? I used to
love the strafe and chop, you know, combination on GoldenEye. Yeah.
What a game.
It's a classic, yeah.
I think a slightly unfair question, with it being hand-to-hand, to any Bond fans out there. Bond's obviously got his other strengths. Bond's better at getting the women, and also might be better with the gun, but
better at drinking, too.
Yeah, and drinking. But anyway, I love Bond as well. They're both great at what they do, those films. But just to come back serious then, I suppose, just to move on now, similar theme, really. The Bourne films have had a massive influence on action films, and obviously in particular, with us mentioning it then, the Bond films. Why do you think they were so influential? I'll start with you, please, Neil.
I just think it brings sort of filmmaking to a new level, because we were so used to like the corny James Bond where you'd see like the car crash. Like in Bourne Identity, you have the mini car chase. Like if you compare that to, say, the GoldenEye chase where he's in the tank and you've got like, it's like comedy slapstick moments where they go into the canal and stuff like that, and it's like henchmen or policemen coming out and going, "Oh no, I'm drowning." But there's none of that going on in Bourne. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, this is serious. If you were in this sort of car chase, there'd be serious ramifications. People would get run over. Things would happen. Yeah. And it's sort of the same throughout the whole series as well, because people die, and James Bond people tend to not die. So that's the main thing. And now, as you see, it's probably influenced the new Bond films, because now people do die and there is ramifications for things, and there's things that weigh on people's conscience, whereas that really wasn't a thing before Bourne.
No, I totally agree. And as well as all that, another thing that you definitely see is Bourne himself. You know, although all action films are to some degree going to push the boundaries, and, you know, they're only realistic to a point because obviously it's entertainment. But Bourne does, like you say, as well as other people getting killed and things, Bourne gets hurt himself. He gets tired. You know, you see the ramifications. He gets injured. You know, as you said, you know, that doesn't really happen with Bond until more recently. Now, obviously, the more recent Bonds, you can see he's more of a real person. He has at times he loses some confidence, and, you know, he physically isn't what he'd always been in the other ones. And I know there've been slight bits of that in the past, but it's definitely been amped up a hell of a lot since Bourne, no doubt. What about yourself, Rory?
I can't really, you know, reiterate that anymore, really. I think that the scene for me that first made me think how influenced it was is the opening in Casino Royale, when it's in somewhere in West Africa, it's the kind of free running section of cinema, and I was like, it's completely different direction for Bond, and the way it was shot and the combat was shot, it was just so similar to Bourne. You know, I remember the Bourne films. It didn't work on a tiny telly, let me put it that way, because you couldn't really make out the action in proper kind of, you know, the feel it is. But some of the action scenes, even in the first Bond film, just that kind of choreography, that way it's shot, kind of realism of using, you know, what's around you rather than just being, you know, at the time of cinema, I think action films were all about big guns and fast cars and stuff. So I think, and Mission Impossible was all about fast cars and motorbikes and the most ridiculous stuff, really, for a time. I mean, they've been influenced as well, because they've kind of brought it, you know, to a more realistic-ish level. And yeah, it's all due to Bourne. It's all due to the direction and all the choreography. And, you know, they brought a lot of kind of Western or Eastern kind of choreography and style into Western cinema, which wasn't really done before in a Hollywood style film. So it was quite a big step up in advancement.
Yeah, totally agree. I think you touched on something as well there in terms of with Bond and some of those other films like the Mission Impossibles. I think they were becoming extremely CGI heavy, and the stunts and ideas were becoming more and more excessive and more ludicrous. Obviously, there is a place for that, because obviously, as you say, Mission Impossible's gone a bit more gritty, but it still has those outlandish stunts, which there is a place for and they're brilliant. But I think maybe Bond in particular had gone too far. I just remember that Die Another Day with an invisible car. And, you know,
I was about to say the invisible
And the windsurfing on a piece of metal or something or whatever it was. I can hardly remember.
From Avalanche.
You know,
it just got far too much. I think they saw, in terms of cinema, they saw, right, the bigger the better, the grander the stunt, the better the audience will enjoy it. And people more enjoy, you know, someone beating someone up with a big biro and a, you know, and a magazine. It's just such a different approach.
Yeah, totally. Particularly because it feels natural as well to that character. You know, it's not just done for let's have a fight where we use this as a sort of prop. It feels as if it just naturally develops that is what this character would do. And I think that's so different to the way Bond had gone. And I do love Bond. I'm being a bit critical of it here because of that period where the Bond films went really bad after GoldenEye, I think. But I think Bourne sort of real stunts and things like that rather than CGI. And I think it helped to bring films back a bit more into, you know, more of a balance between the two. And I think that's obviously a really good thing. What are your thoughts on the character of Bourne and obviously Matt Damon's performance, Rory?
I was earlier in the week on our pod, I was defending Affleck, so I'll probably do the same, really. I'm a big Matt Damon fan, actually. You know, I know some of his cinema isn't the most appreciated, but he's had such a good, consistent career. And he really did, you could tell that there was a lot of effort that went into these films, because he does speak some multiple languages extremely well, albeit quite brief. And he was in great shape for this. You could see a little bit with him I think it felt like the first time, well, Good Will Hunting is probably one of my favourite films, so not exactly the first time, but you could see him get into a headspace in these films where he really was the character. It's probably not quite Brando-esque levels of pre-development films and stuff, but you could see that he was in that mindset and he played emotionless, which the character kind of is quite well, but when he kind of let emotion in and he started to become, you know, not the kind of weapon he'd been, you know, made to be, he played that well and the emotion started to come through. And I thought he was excellent, and I think he got better and better.
Totally agree with your points there. What about yourself, Neil? What were your thoughts?
I think it was a real coming of age for Matt Damon, because although he was maybe the lead character, whatever, in Talented Mr. Ripley or Good Will Hunting, or even like he was in Ocean's 11 the year before Born Identity.
Yeah.
But he was always supported by these like big name actors like Gwyneth Paltrow or Jude Law in the Talented Mr. Ripley, Robin Williams, stuff like that. But this was his. He was the biggest name in it. It was the first time that he got to lead, and I think it was the start of Matt Damon, really. Before that, it was great acting or whatever, but this is like the method acting that was, because he became Jason Bourne. And it's sort of a testament now that whenever you see Matt Damon in films, you probably think of him more as Jason Bourne than you think of him as anything else. It's not like you watch a film, you think of him as whatever, was it Mark Watney in The Martian or whatever like that, or Good Will Hunting. So for me, I think it was a testament. It was the first time that you'd seen his true acting prowess, and him becoming a character, believing he was a character, and then portraying that on screen.
No, a lot of great points made by you both there. I think that's a great point as well about Matt Damon. Now, obviously, hindsight, and we sometimes look at things differently, don't we, when we look back? But you're right. He's credited it with essentially rescuing his career, because he'd had that initial period with Good Will Hunting and Talented Mr. Ripley and things like that. And they'd been well received. But then after that, he'd made quite a few poor films, like, I think The Legend of Bagger Vance and, All the Pretty Horses and things like that. Not particularly commenting on their quality, but the way they were received. And I think he said at that stage, he weren't getting scripts anymore to be leading men, or at least not quality scripts. And when he took this, you know, it was like a troubled production, and, you know, a lot of people thought it was gonna do bad, because there was constant fighting between Doug Liman and the producers and things like that. And I think people thought this could be it for Matt Damon. Obviously, he'd still get work, but in terms of a leading man, there was a bit of a worry. And I think that's why when Ocean's 12 came out, there were a lot of jokes about, you know, his character in that. I think Linus was it. He can now have a leading role. Is he ready for the leading role because of how well Bourne had done? Whereas obviously in the first one, I think he was a late replacement for Mark Wahlberg in the first one. Wahlberg pulled out to do Planet of the Apes. So it's fascinating now, as you say, because he did that role and he did so well, and then it obviously became this phenomenon. His career hasn't really looked back, but you're right, it was a really massive thing in his career, and, you know, I totally agree with you both. I think he was outstanding. I think to pull off that action and be believable, and also amnesia. Most things that have an amnesia plot, I don't have a lot of time for, and I tend to come off a bit laughable to me, but his was totally believable. And obviously the fact that he was able to be this, you know, this killer, and so good at looking after himself and getting out of situations, but still convey all that pain and hate and sorrow that the character had, I just think was brilliant. And, you know, one of my favourite performances, to be honest, definitely in action films anyway. Yeah, I'm now going to look at, obviously, we've mentioned a lot about Matt Damon there and obviously Jason Bourne, but these films had so many quality supporting characters backing them up, and, you know, so too many to name, really. Do any of them particularly stand out for you, Neil? Any that you found particularly memorable?
I really like the character of Pam Landy. Some people will probably think, oh, she's a bit naggy or whatever, but which normally I would in films, but she kind of brings me, she's like the Edward Snowden type character. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because this film was really like the first of where the government was the enemy.
Yeah.
And she was like the one sensible head in the government that was sort of taking a step back and saying, hey, I don't think this is right or whatever, which is something we would expect from our people in our government. And we'd hope that they would do that. But everybody else is just following the party line. These all seem to be like brainless drones going, right, I'm going to search for Jason Bourne. I'm going to kill Jason Bourne. And then she was kind of like the polar opposite to all the agents that they were trying to create, where she was taking the evidence in and she was deciding herself whether she was going to act upon it. Whereas, the agents in the field got a message to their phone and they just carried out their bidding. So it was like a great contrasting character. So for me, I think I enjoyed her through, I don't think she was in the first one, but she was in the next two, wasn't she?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I think she's my favorite secondary character in the series.
Yeah. No, she's brilliant. And as you say, I think bringing in that here as like a counterpoint to so many of them other characters makes it so much more interesting, because you're seeing these clashes. And it always, one of the enjoyable things about it for me is that it's almost like at times, obviously, it's like a bureaucratic normal office at times with these power plays and power struggles, when these are people in, you know, at the CIA and like controlling these top secret budgets and assassins, and so much of it is just office politics, but obviously taken to extremes. And, you know, I think at one stage here, Brian Cox is going on about this as being above her pay grade and things like that. And they're all such strong characters, and I just love that interplay between them. What about yourself, Rory? Are there any you particularly stand out for you?
You just mentioned him, but I think Brian Cox's character, Ward Abbott, is excellent. He's the kind of polar opposite. He's the corrupt, you know, officer in the CIA, and you know, he's the one that will basically do anything to survive, ultimately doesn't, but I think he's brilliant. I think he brings a lot of kind of experience and nous to the role, and I think that was kind of needed. And Chris Cooper's quite similar as Conklin. Conklin's huge in the books, you know, huge kind of mentor role. Yeah. And I thought he portrayed that really well on screen. And I think, you know, Marie's also really solid, you know, in the parts that she's in the films. I think she kind of, it's not the best acted role or something, but in terms of the influence it has on Damon's character, I think she's really, really good. I think she's a positive note, and obviously positive, which is not part of the rest of their makeup. And you probably need a little bit of that to balance things out at times.
Definitely, totally agree. She's good for him to play off, because she brings out obviously a softer side, and, you know, humanizes the situation. And she's a bit like us, I suppose, trying to comprehend what he's saying, and is it true, or, you know, is he making it up? And, you know, I totally agree. I really enjoyed her scene.
I think her reaction after the major scene in the Paris apartment and the fight scene is kind of what most people would be like. Do you know what I mean? You know, if you've seen a dead body or someone, you know, jump out the window and all that's gone on, and then her picture's been branded about, because she just doesn't know who she got in the car with, really. She just, you know, really doesn't know. So yeah, it's a well played role.
Yeah, and I think that's another great point of these films that you hit on there, that I think Neil touched on earlier on. Things have consequences in a lot of these films. You see something, you know, huge happen, and some of the characters have no reaction. It's like they've just seen someone, you know, spill a glass of milk or something. Whereas in this, as you both have mentioned, these things and these, you know, actions have consequences. You know, you would be horrified if you'd seen that, like she was, and shaken up. And it's so refreshing to see that, because it makes the film so much more real. And I think Doug Liman was saying that was one of his key things. He wanted it to feel real. Obviously, like we've said, they are action films, you know, with a thriller element, obviously, and they're not going to be truly realistic, but he wanted them to have some of that feeling of realness. Like, you know, this is almost what could be going on. And I think those type of things, those reactions, really help give it that, to be honest with you. I'm now going to look at the films themselves, really. But the first question I'm going to ask is to you, Neil. It's what would you say is your favourite film of the trilogy, and why is that?
I think it has to be the first one, because it just sets all the whole wheels in motion. I think it's where Matt Damon's at his coldest as well, which is what I really enjoy about the Bourne character, because as he progresses, when he meets his girlfriend and stuff and moves on, he sort of becomes a bit more lighter, and then he's helping Nikki Parsons later on as well, so he kind of becomes a bit more affectionate. Whereas at the start, in where it all began, he's just one motivation, who am I, and figuring out what he can do about it. So I'd say the first one's probably for me. And I think just the setting, just the whole, the American embassy in the first one, the whole snowy setting, the dull drabness. I just love that whole atmosphere. Whereas, the next two, they start off in sunny places and things like that. And then they end up in, is it Africa or something, in Ultimatum? So that's why I prefer the first one. It's just the mood, the atmosphere, and the general character of Jason Bourne. I think it's just, at its most perfect in the first one.
I think you hit on another really refreshing thing about these films, the locations, as you say. You know, not many huge action films would be in, you know, European settings these days. Obviously in the 70s, that was quite common, but before Bourne, I think it was quite rare, and definitely quite rare to be in these sort of, you know, as you say, in sort of a normal cityscape rather than the really glamorous parts of Europe. And I think there was something really refreshing and gritty and real about seeing those places. And obviously, you know, so memorable, as you say. What about you, Rory?
I think I kind of have to agree, but it's tricky because I take all three films as almost a collective, you know, because they all have their own parts of the story to tell. I really like the third film and the way it kind of wrapped everything up, and it kind of got more intense and more intense as it went on. So but I think I have to agree with the first one. I wasn't opposed to the sunnier kind of climates. I quite like the Morocco scenes, and I do like the parts in India in the first film, in the second film in Goa, but I think that European feel to it is just what the film is all about. I think the kind of driving through Europe, It made it feel more real from a person when I was, 18, and probably the next year went interrailing around Europe and across half these cities and through Germany and stuff. So it kind of felt more like,
I think it's because you can imagine where you could be there. You know what I mean? You can't, when like Bond or something goes to Monaco and things like that. I'm never going to be in this situation.
When he's in Venice and he jumps on his speedboat or his yacht or whatever it is, you know what I mean? And it doesn't connect the same way. Whereas this, he's getting a train across Europe, or he's you know, obviously lands up on a coastal shore, he's driving across Europe, and the kind of blurred lines and the signs on the road, and that's the realness about it, the grit. I think the embassy scene is excellent. Even the first scene, when you realise he isn't maybe who he was, when he's on the park bench in just before he, you know, kind of goes into the embassy, and the two police officers kind of approach him, and he's trying to speak English, trying to explain, and then he comes out with, you know, Meine Papieren have stolen or whatever, and lost his papers and stuff in German, perfect German, and then he basically floors them both in 10 seconds. That was great, and I loved all that kind of scene, because it was very real, and he was really cold in that first film, but he was very meticulous and calm in the embassy when he's walking the floors, and he takes a walkie-talkie and the fire escape map, and he's just looking for the route to exit, and he just, you know, he's very, very calm about it all. He never flusters or never loses his cool, and that's why he's such a great film, that first film.
Before that, Rory, had you ever seen, because I don't think I had you ever seen something like that in an action film where the action star does something so practical and sensible and pragmatic as getting that map off the wall? And I can remember being in the cinema when he did that and being blown away, because it was just so
so simple, but so clever and so obvious. Why had that never been in a film before? And it was like, he did it all in, as you say, in this efficient way. It wasn't like he took it and he stopped. It was all fluid. He was on the move. You know, it was like he was this perfect machine to just knew exactly what to do. And it was,
that's the difference. Yeah. And that's the difference in these films, because it's no gloss. It's no over the top. He's going to escape by doing something ridiculous, or I don't know. Yeah, I'd never seen anything like that. I really hadn't, and I don't think anyone does it quite as well as Greengrass and Damon do it, really.
Yeah, no, can't disagree with that. What would you say your favourite scene is from The Bourne Identity? I know you mentioned it, Neil, so maybe that it's the same scene, but what is your favourite scene from that?
I love the embassy scene, but I think it has to be the car chase, because I think the car chase sets the tone for every action movie that comes after it.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's brilliant in the fact that it makes you, the viewer, look at your city or cities you've been to as a playground of action. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of what would, if I had a Mini Cooper and I was running from the cops, maybe where would I go? Where would I drive? Where, how could I get away? Would I pull up this alleyway, hide? You know what I mean? And it just influenced everything that comes after it, because it seems that every action film since has been set in narrow streets, in whether it be in New York, whether it be in Europe, whether it be in London or whatever. And it's just set the tone for everything going forward. And I think it's not only the best scene, I think, in that movie, but I think it's the best scene in the trilogy, really.
Well, it is brilliant, and as you say, it's so influential. It's it's been copied in so many films. You know, similar types of car chases, and you know, it is as you say. I think it's also linked to that other point we made earlier on, where we were saying about, you know, Bond is all glamour. You know, this is in a Mini, and I imagine if you pitched that to a Hollywood executive, you know, before seeing what this film was, I were going to have the action star in a Mini, and it's not going to be for comedy. It's actually just going to be a full-on chase.
They've probably all seen images of Michael Caine, probably.
Yeah. that's what you would think of, isn't it? You'd think of a bit of a comedy. But
it's no doubt influenced by that, but at the same time, this was like the maturity. This was the growing up of the car chase.
Totally. And any bits of comedy are sort of just an extra thing. It's never done for just purely for comedy. Obviously, at times a Mini, you know, taking chase off all these police cars and outwitting them is just naturally funny at times and enjoyable. But it's never done like purely for that. That's just an add-on, really, isn't it? I think. I'm going to move on now to The Bourne Supremacy. I'll start with you on this, please, Rory. What would you say your favourite scene from that film was? Obviously, there's so many.
Favourite scene from Supremacy is the fight scene in Switzerland, I believe it is, when he basically confronts who he thinks is the last agent to get information, and they meet in his apartment, and he binds his hands with those kind of plastic, you know, plastic handcuffs, essentially, and the guy triggers the alarm, so the police are going to come in 5 minutes. And they have an absolutely monumental fight in this apartment. The agent picks up a knife, and because he's got his hands bound, it's, you know, really tight, close to his chest, and Damon basically struggles to find, you know, anything to rally back until he finds a newspaper or a magazine, rolls it up, and just absolutely obliterates him, which was just a scene. I mean, the first film, I said, uses a pen to disarm the guy's knife in his hand, but this one, with the magazine that he eventually, you know, undoes the gas pipes, uses the magazine and the toaster and blows the apartment. It was just the best fight scene I've ever seen by a long way.
It's fantastic, isn't it? And like we mentioned earlier on, you feel it, don't you? You feel tired watching it. You feel
tense. Yeah, you do feel tense. You know, it genuine, because I think you know he's going to survive. You know, it's principally right, but because he can get hurt and because he is injured a lot of the time, it does feel like you're on your edge of your seat. And I remember being, I remember just thinking, this is incredible.
Yeah. And it's like brutal. I think at the end, they actually, he strangles them to death, if I recall.
Yeah, correctly. He does.
It's so brutal as well because it feels so real and you have almost feel a tiredness about these guys. Got to be said as well, the guy he's fighting is an absolute badass. If he can fight Jason Bourne with his hands tied and give him a real good go. Obviously, I know I always talk about these films as if they're real, but it is amazing, though, in the film, how well that other guy does. You know,
Choreography, though, in this and the way it's obviously shot, and I know they talk about the hand cams and all that kind of stuff, but it puts you in the scene. It almost puts you in the first person view. And I know Neil's a big gamer and stuff as well, and these kind of films do kind of closely tie in with gaming and how you'd feel in that mindset. Yeah, it's more realistic. It's much more realistic.
Yeah, no, totally. And as you mentioned, the Greengrass's direction is just, stunning, really.
He's an incredible director, yeah.
Yeah, he's so talented. What about yourself for this one, Neil? What would your favourite scene be? Or is it the same, that is a brilliant scene. It's quite hard to look past, I suppose.
I think, unusually for an action film, my favourite scene, I think, in Supremacy is when Bourne meets Abbott and they're sort of having it out because it's unusual because he's basically the antagonist. Like, he's the bad guy. And you finally meet him sort of halfway through the second movie of a trilogy. And it's kind of like, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That doesn't normally happen. And then Bourne is blaming him for everything. And he's saying, hey, you killed Marie. And then Abbott just twists it around and he goes, no, you killed Marie. When the moment she entered your car, you killed Marie. And then Jason just sort of, it dawns on him that he can't then therefore be connected to anybody now. His life can never be the same. He can never find love. He can never be with anybody because they will always be searching for him. They will always go after him and they'll always be in danger. So he'll always be alone. I think it was a really poignant moment in the series. Although he, as I said earlier, he gets a bit close with Nikki Parsons. It is platonic. It's not romantic. And you feel like Jason Bourne can never be romantic or never be connected to anybody ever again, purely because of what Abbott says. And it's such a strong performance from Brian Cox when he says it. And he's so direct. And for me, that was the best scene in that film. I think that movie was more about the drama of it, more about the psyche of it than it was about the action of everything.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point there. And it's something we mentioned recently, me and Rory on the comic pod. Those scenes that, like you say, it's such a powerful scene that they make the action all the better, don't they? Because you're so much more invested in this character. And you see, as you say, it dawns on him, and the thing with characters like this, and they're both so strong, you can't truly bullshit them. So when Abbott makes those points, Bourne knows he's right. He knows he's right. He knows that what he's saying is true. And as you say, that's then adds to that guilt he already has for his past anyway. He's got this new guilt. And as you say, that realization that this is his life probably forever, really, that he will always, as you say, be a danger to anyone just through having that past. And I think that I couldn't agree more. That's an absolute brilliant scene. And I like that you both chose two scenes that show the different strengths of that film, which we mentioned earlier on. That one for me is the best of the three, but you ask me tomorrow and I'd probably say a different answer. They're all so good. they are, aren't they? They're just fantastic. One of the best trilogies. I know it's obviously going to have a fourth now, but one of the best trilogies I've ever seen, definitely.
I think the best thing about it is we watch characters in these films as opposed to watching heroes, which is what... I know Rory's on Comic Pod and stuff like that, but when we watch comic book movies and things like that, we're just watching heroes. They're not really... We can't relate to them.
No, give me this any day of the week over any comic franchise. Just, I'd Stu, if he ever listens, will probably berate me and disown me. I'll probably be replaced next week. But truth be told, these kind of films, in this way, because it's got all the kind of elegance of like a spy thriller, incredible script, incredible direction, and then the performances are incredible. And then coupled with that, then you've got the action and everything else that goes along with it. Because I know you mentioned the car chase scene before, the song, Ready, Steady, Go, whatever it's called. It's that kind of, you know, the sound mixing in these films and the editing style of it is great. But that kind of sudden turn up in style, and it's obviously shot in kind of Germany and Central Europe, and it's kind of like trance dance European music, and it just works, you know, all that kind of sudden shift change. I just thought, I haven't seen a film or trilogy of films that were this well kind of edited and put together. Joe mentioned something on our pod the other day about when you watch a film that's so well edited and cut and there's no loose ends, you know. I just think this whole trilogy, rather than some of the other trilogies that as they go on feel like they have to add more and have to add excess for no reason, these films are the way the character is portrayed. It's just straight down the line and no added.
It's something that Marvel and Disney and DC to maybe a lesser extent have been striving towards, is the combination of having the action, but molding it alongside having strong characters. Marvel are trying, they're trying it, to their credit, they are trying to make it. I think the only successful way they've done it in the past 10 years, whatever, has been the Nolan version of Batman, where they were able to mold it together. But I still think that Marvel and now the new DC as well are probably just striving to try and match the two together to get the full range, but they still haven't quite found it.
It's very difficult when it's a different audience and it's a different style, and these films are a lot lower expectation. You know, I think they probably went into the first film, you know, quite a small budget. Damon wasn't a superstar, you know, at that stage. He was known, but wasn't anywhere near the level he's become. Yeah. And no other major kind of cast members, only a few kind of smaller parts of quite esteemed actors, but no one off the page. So it wasn't going to be ever, you know, the same style or scale as any of those kind of major releases now. I think the pressure for the film coming up in the summer will be that now it's probably built with a bigger budget and maybe a bit more expectation with a break that's gone on between the films.
No, definitely. And I think it's important to say as well with these, and compare it to, you know, the comic films, the different moods as well. Do you know what I mean? They're for different moods. So, there'll be Avengers Assemble for me is like, you know, some people may laugh at this, but it's a masterpiece of its type, I think.
It is.
And obviously, I know you feel the same, Rory. Yeah. And so is this. And I'd watch that in one mood and I'd watch this in another mood. And it's good to have those different types of films. And, you know, but as you have both said, I think this is perfectly balanced. And it's interesting. Obviously, we've mentioned some of those other actors and things like that. I was reading that Doug Liman on the first one made a comment about saying that he had some like scenes with Chris Cooper, but as you say, his Conklin was just, you know, stunningly good. He said he had some breathtaking scenes with him and some of the other characters in the office. He said he actually had to cut them out, or he was told to cut them out, because a lot of people get frustrated if you spend too much time away from the star. Now that to me is quite sad. But what I would say is it's still, I think they've probably got the balance perfect in this, because he's obviously kept a lot of those scenes in. And then, as you say, then those scenes when you've got the star and the character, it just elevates the star for me. It just makes everything they do seem better. If, you know, it's one thing going up against some, you know, somebody we don't know or someone who's maybe not as talented, but when you've got Matt Damon acting against, as you say, you know, your Albert Finney's or your Brian Cox's, as you mentioned before, Neil, it just has so much more to it, really. It just, I don't know, it just elevates everyone's performance, I think, doesn't it? I'm now going to look at the Bourne Ultimatum and, you know, what your favourite scene would be in that. And I'll start with you, please, Neil.
I think I gave it away on Twitter when I was watching it. I think Rory either commented on it or liked it or whatever. It's the scene at the very end where you think he's dead and then he just moves. That, and it's I don't know why. I just love that scene. It's the one that really sticks out for me from that movie. I don't know. And then Moby's, you were mentioning the soundtrack as well. And then Moby's Extreme Ways kicks in. Cause everything had just gone to the doldrums at that point. You were like, well, I guess it's a happy ending. And then boom, Extreme Ways kicks in. He starts kicking and then he's alive and you're like, maybe there's got to be another one. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's taken this long for another one to come out. We'll ignore the other one, but it's taken this long for the, I don't know why. I just love that scene. And the music compliment, although the music's in all three of them, it just complements that superbly, especially after with the newsreel going over the top of it of everybody getting indicted and all that. Yeah. And you're thinking, well, everybody's fucked basically. Even Jason's fucked. But then he's alive. I don't know. It was one of the rare happy moments in the entire trilogy, really.
Yeah, I think I can remember in the cinema there was a big like cheer when he moved. You know, everyone was made up, and as you say, obviously there's not a lot of those type moments in these films. As good as they are, obviously most of the time he's in peril, isn't he? So no, it's a.
The other thing I love is the fact that it complements nicely with when we met Jason Bourne in the very beginning in the water. So it's like gone full circle, which I don't know whether that was intentional or not, but it probably was because things aren't movies by accident.
True.
So it was kind of like a rebirth moment because that was him born into the character of trying to find out who he was, and then this was him being born again.
Great points there. What about yourself, Rory? What was your favourite scene from Ultimatum?
I like the scene when he says, "Get some rest, Pam, you look tired," and he's looking through the sniper, because one of the others reacts where they can overhear it, and he's looking right at her, and they just all, the whole office almost freezes. it's a really good scene, because I can imagine them on. You know, that's why it felt quite real, this film, because it, especially in the books, all the scenes around New York and around, is it New York or is it Washington? But just around the buildings and the CIA and how they're operating and how he's searching to find out who he really is. And it's also prominent. It's a big, big part of the kind of books. And yeah, I like the scenes as well with Albert Finney. Where he kind of discovers who he actually is and remembers completely, you know, what happened to him. Because it is quite intense, you know, and he does play those parts with pretty good emotion as well. You can feel the strain, and he's, he obviously always talks about the headaches and the kind of traumas and stuff. And yeah, I think the third film, I don't think it's the strongest film, but at the time I remember just absolutely loving it, because I think it just ties everything so well together and obviously needs to exist. And it does tie well within the books and the way they, you know, I don't think you got any level of disappointment having read the books or watched the film, that it concluded in the right fashion.
I think you both summed it up really well there. You know, the conclusion of that trilogy was nigh on perfect, really. And I love that, like you mentioned, the Pam Landy scene. I think I always love intelligence in films, and obviously Pam Landy's extremely intelligent. Her team, no doubt, they've got all these tools and all these gadgets and systems and things, and he completely pulls the rug out from under them. And I just love it that he lets them know as well, you know, in a humorous way as well. And it's just just so good, that scene. I can't believe I made up in a way that neither of you have mentioned my favourite scene. It's one of my favourite scenes in any film, to be honest. Waterloo Station. I just think that is just so good. It is just so well choreographed. It shows, you know, Bourne's intelligence, what a strategic mind he's got, you know, everything about it, and obviously the way it's shot and, you know, the editing, everything is brilliant, and he does everything right. And, you know, even the sort of, it gives you that sort of terror of, like, you know, this guy pushing the bin cart could be an assassin, because anyone could be an assassin. And I love the way he's so able to assess threats in a way that nobody else can because he's so highly trained. And yeah. I also like the fact that obviously he's both touched on this earlier on. He does everything right and it still goes wrong because obviously Paddy Gonstein's character, and he was excellent in such a small role as well. I think his character hasn't got what Bourne's got. You know, not everyone can be so cool in such a horrendous situation. And, you know, if he'd have just followed Bourne's instructions, he'd have been fine. But it's so hard to do when you're in a situation like that. And I even love it at the end of that scene where he chases after the sniper and gets so close, but just can't catch him. And I just think that scene's just breathtaking, really. It really is. I think that's a good point to have a short break. So just go and get yourselves a drink or something, and we'll be right back in a few seconds.
You're listening to
The Anfield Index.
The Anfield Index.
Podcast channel.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, so many amazing fight scenes in the trilogy, and obviously we've touched on a few of them up to now. I'll start with you, please, Rory. Is there any, obviously you've mentioned one earlier, but is there any others that particularly stand out for you?
I'm trying to think. The one in North Africa, the one in Morocco, is pretty damn awesome, where he basically rescues her in the last kind of second. So they're kind of fighting, he's fighting through the streets to find her, all through the rooftops and the alleyways. And then he jumps through the pane of glass and basically storms in on the guy and they have an incredible fight. That one's excellent. Obviously we talked about, a couple of the others. And then the original one in the French apartment where that guy just, he doesn't stay down. No. He literally keeps, as soon as you blink, he's back on his feet and he's relentless. And he pulls the knife and then Bourne has to, bats to the desk, picks up the pen, removes the lid. It's also shown, do you know what I mean? It shows you exactly the way it's visually going to be done. And then, basically removes the knife, breaks his arm, breaks his leg, I think, basically disables him. That's the first time, the first time you really get to see his full skills in terms of his training and his fighting style and action. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, no, that was sensational, that. And again, so brutal. And I think I remember reading at the time, it was like a type of martial art where one of the things it does is the other person's strengths, it sort of, you damage them step by step. And obviously that's what he does, doesn't he? Every limb essentially gets damaged to the extent, as you say, this guy, he's still coming, but he's got nothing because Bourne's pretty much injured every part of him. And it's so well done. And so, as we said earlier on, you just feel like you're in there with them, don't you? It's just breathless.
I do quickly. The one I also like at the end of the first scene with Clive Owen, and it's not a fight scene as such. It's like a It feels like a mission from Metal Gear Solid, where you're against the sniper. I just loved it where he blows the car or he blows the oil tanker in the garden to distract him. And then he sprints across the field. And then it's just basically, you know, a standoff until one of them blinks. It's a really clever scene for two, you know, obviously professional contractors for hire. But I really like that. And I like the fact that he knows he's there because the dog's not come back. And this kind of sixth sense of something's not right. Yeah, I think that was a really good scene as well.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. And he, as you say, he's so quick. He's onto it with the dog, you know, straight away. That's something that happens any other times. And then, as you say, he's so decisive as well. He goes from, he's obviously in this sort of family scene, but once he realizes that and he gets that gun, obviously I like the fact that he can see he's clearly guilty and sorry for what he's brought to this family as well, which is, again, as we say, the consequences.
Yeah, I think he gets the headaches. I always get the headaches.
Oh, yeah.
You can feel it. It's a really small part, but obviously Clive Owen's a pretty esteemed actor, so, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and what's the line? Look at what they make you give. And I think that had so much weight because, obviously, that's exactly how Bourne is. He's trapped with this history he doesn't want. And you know, and obviously he's just seeing somebody in the same situation, you know, lose his life for this job that he doesn't even want anymore, but he's not being allowed to leave behind. What about yourself, Neil? Any particular stand out for you?
I don't think there's much left. I think Rory covered it all. It was going to be the French one, and then when he started mentioning the French one, it was going to be with Clive Owen.
The thing is, for an action film, you'd think there'd be more, actually, and that's what surprised me, because I thought back about them all, and I haven't had a chance to watch them all again, but, you know, I thought back and thought, well, there must be more, you know, prominent fight scenes, but there isn't as many standout ones, and that's good. That's what I like about it.
I think he's an efficient killer, or he's an efficient agent in the fact that he knows how to avoid a fight, which is why there's so little fights. This is probably my you were going to say his ingenuity, I know that's coming up later on, but where he gets everybody out of the CIA office that follows Pam Landy, and then rings Chris Cooper up and says, how's your office? I'm in my office. And he goes, that's funny. I'm in your office. Do you know what I mean? So he's always thinking of ways to get everybody out so as he doesn't have to cause any pain or destruction to anybody, which I think it's pivotal to that character of what Jason Bourne's trying to be. He doesn't want the chaos. He wants to avoid it, but it's also his training. He knows to avoid scenes, basically. But in terms of fights, the one in the French apartment probably sticks out the most because it was the first time he was using just inanimate objects, just a biro, a phone, anything, to kick the shit out of somebody, basically.
Yeah, I remember saying one of the best things ever would be if you trapped, like, Jason Bourne and 50 men in a stationary supplier or something like that. Because he just finds ways and means, you know, killing someone with a protractor and a staple remover or something.
Everybody end up a staple in their head. Pretty much.
It's funny, since then, obviously, I think Taken's done a bit of this in a few other films, if I recall correctly. But that was, it sounds like it was the same for you. That was the first time I'd ever seen a film do that. Use an object like that to win a fight.
Like, but, a bloody, you know, magazine. I mean? Using a magazine to kick somebody up the arse, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, or a book, you know, these things that it just doesn't happen, does it? But obviously, since then, some films do, but it was done so well in these films, it's unbelievable.
I forgot about Taken, actually. Taken is basically almost a direct rip of the Bourne trilogy in its own way.
Dumbed down version, so it is.
Yeah, it is the dumbed down version. The first one's got a few merits, but then everything else that Liam Neeson's basically done on the back of the Taken film, including the two horrible sequels, are just then more watered down versions of it. So it has started somewhat of a trend in modern.
It takes the whole the pen's mighty to the sword and turns it on its head, doesn't it?
I love that scene because it's just the fact that he takes the pen, But not only that, you see the visual removing of the lid. Do you know what I mean? It's not a pen without a lid on it. It's just, it has to be right. Do you know what I mean? I wonder how many times they shot those kind of scenes, the action scenes. But
it's where it goes into his body as well. It reminds me of Hostel, where somebody cuts the guy's Achilles. Yeah. It's like, how would you feel if that was to happen to you? Like, you immediately wince at the sight of it.
Yeah, because he shoves it between the fingers, but you see the guy remove it. It's that scene where you like see him pulling it out of his skin.
It brings up the whole them being a machine thing and really hits it home, doesn't it?
Yeah, that guy is a machine, that first fighter. He's just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. When you see him just remove that as if it's just another day at the office, you're right. It just is. These are human machines, and they just, you know, like they say about the Terminator, absolutely will not stop until it's achieved its mission. And yeah, no, that scene was amazing. One that stands out for me, which isn't that type of fight scene, but just one that shows how different these can be, is the one, I think, in the CIA station office in Naples, and where Bourne just stays like almost like a mongoose or something. He just stays completely still, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then eventually explodes on this guy who's got no chance of dealing with him at all. He's like, you know, he's nowhere near the level of person who should be at a fighting Bourne. I think he says something on the phone, doesn't he? Like, he's ready to handle it or contain it. And then the next minute he's on the deck, knocked out, and then he wakes up. And even that's just so clever. Do he put that thing under the door handle and it then wouldn't go down?
He steals his phone, doesn't he? And then
he clones it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's also
all meticulous. It's all planned, and that's why it's so clever, because, all the scenes throughout, he does have a bit of an adversary. I can't remember whether is the second film the part when they're in the Eastern Bloc in Russia, or is that the third film?
Second.
That trained assassin's tough. He's the one that, I think, it's the one that shoots Marie.
Carl Urban.
Is it Carl Urban, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they obviously have that other driving sequence where they both barely walk away from it. And that's just another real, it just feels so real, because they're both, he ends up limping at the end of that film. He's badly, badly hurt. And it's good, that kind of Soviet Eastern Bloc, and again, more European locations. But these films, all the films have loads of locations, but they didn't feel anywhere near Bond, It didn't feel like they're jumping on a private jet from one place to the next. It just felt real.
I think you're right there. I mean, the thing with Bond, as we've said, Bond's filmed everywhere. It's probably filmed some of these same countries and cities, but it always feels like it's
like 80 days around the world.
Yeah, they don't feel like real streets, do they? You don't believe anyone's ever walked down these streets. They just feel like sets, even though a lot of the time they're not.
Have you seen the latest one? Have you seen the Mexico scene?
Bond?
Yeah.
Oh, my better half fell asleep during this, so I didn't get to watch the end. But I wasn't enjoying it, if I'm honest.
No, but the first scene when they're in, Diel del Muerte or whatever, in Mexico City. I've been to Mexico City. That didn't at all feel like Mexico City, even though it is. Do you know what I mean? It's just the way it's done. I like in the Bourne films, all the traffic's still moving and the trams are still moving. And they use them as part of the way it operates. It's not like I know they still film it and will have extras and things like that, but it's still done in a much more organic kind of way. It's not like, closing off four blocks and doing all the rest of it. So yeah, that's the big, big divide and difference between the two kind of franchises.
Yeah. And in fairness, because I've been quite critical of Bond, sometimes that's great, that the Bond glamour, there is a place for it. But I think, obviously, as we've said, sometimes then films go a bit too far down that street, so to speak. And this was so refreshing to feel like it's in real places with real people. Obviously, we've mentioned a few of them there, the bits of ingenuity. We may have covered the ones you were going to say. Have either of you got any bits of Bourne's ingenuity that we maybe haven't touched on that
the light, enjoyed? Do you remember the lamp under the door?
Oh, yeah.
Where and the fan, and he makes them think that he's on the other side of it.
Yeah,
that was quite excellent. Again, using just ordinary everyday objects to get the job done.
Yeah, that was cracking. Yeah, that was a great example. What about yourself, Rory? Have you got any?
I can't think of any more now. Nothing. The one really minor thing is when he's in the Swiss bank and he just clears out his, you know, he knows he's got to get out and he clears it out into the bin and he just takes the kind of bin bag with him. I know it's already a backpack kind of thing, but yeah. It's still, you know, it's that element of practicality. It's that element of unfussiness. I kind of like the fact when he just turns up in Naples and he's just wearing the kind of fisherman's jumper and he doesn't look like a movie star or doesn't look like a, you know, there's no fancy gadgets. It's all just the use of the mind and the skills. It's good.
Yeah, totally agree. The one that probably still remains that I really liked at the time was, I think it was in Morocco on the rooftops. You know, he's so quick with his thinking. Yeah. He knows there'll be glass on them.
Yeah, and he covers his hands.
Oh, he covers the hands with the washing that's been hung up. And again, as we've said a few times, it's so efficient. He doesn't stop. It's while he's running. He does it all on the move. And it's just so good. It really stops
the police in their tracks because they can't go any further just because of this one bit of glass. But he's already about three moves ahead. It's like a game of chess.
You're right. He is. He's like a grandmaster. It's so intelligent. The next thing we're going to look at is, I'm not sure if either of you watched it at all, but The Bourne Legacy, did either of you watch it and did you like it?
I almost did a few times, but I kind of didn't feel like I wanted to. And then when it kind of got announced they were going to make another Bourne, I was like, I'll just leave it.
Mm-hmm. No, I did watch it, but I weren't blown away by it. It weren't a particularly bad film by any stretch, but it was nowhere near as good.
I found it, nothing happened. Nothing really happened.
Yeah, it was quite dull. It was quite dull.
And I love Jeremy Renner normally.
I do too.
But it was more about some pills than anything else. And I was just like, nothing's really happening in this movie. People are just sort of getting on with it and that's it. There's nothing standout-ish. Like I basically can't remember what happened in the movie. I just remember
never a good sign, is it?
I remember some snow and that's it. I can't really remember and some pills.
I think that was one of the bits I liked, actually, where he gets rid of, I think he's got like some sort of tracker and he gets rid of it in the snow. That was one of the few bits I enjoyed, but it was quite dull overall and definitely nowhere near the caliber of these films. Last question now, obviously we've covered so much and I really enjoyed hearing your thoughts. Are you looking forward to the next instalment? And I'll start with you, please, Neil.
I am, but I'm anxious because I'm just hoping, as sort of Rory alluded to earlier on, I don't want them to take on the mentality of they have to go bigger and bigger with every install that's coming. I hope it doesn't go CGI. I hope it stays true to what it actually is. I'm quietly confident that because of Greengrass that it will be fine, but I'm a little anxious that they're going to try and go big because it seems to be with everything that comes out these days, like nothing's ever truly dead. And then you really want it to come back. But when it comes back, you then think, well, grass really wasn't greener. I just really should have thought about that. I don't really want it back after all. It was fine the way it was. So I just hope it wasn't a movie of its time. And when it comes back out now, it either seems dated because it's trying to do what it did before, if you know what I mean. Or it's gone the full other way and it's trying to be like action movies now where it doesn't fit in at all. It's not like Bourne at all. So I don't know. It's a tricky one for me. I know I'm kind of contradicting myself there, but there's like a balance in between those two that I think that it needs to find. It can't be dated and it can't be too contemporary, basically.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. And I think a lot of people have similar thoughts about it. What about yourself, Rory?
I've kind of not been paying it too much attention because, well, to be fair, the media's not been paying it that much attention because they've not really released much about it, which is good until the kind of, I think there's only a teaser trailer so far, even though it's coming out in the summer. So, I think given the fact that it's written by Damon and Greengrass and Christopher Rouse, who's involved in all the other ones, and Captain Phillips and other kind of really good films in recent years, is involved in terms of the writing and directing, and because working well together. I don't think they would have done it if, A, the script wasn't up to par and they felt it was the right time to do it again, because they have been offered it multiple times over many years. And Damon's obviously had other things he wanted to do, as it's probably Greengrass. And I'm positive that I don't think they would have come back to it unless it was the right story and the right project for all to be involved. And I think the cast looks pretty solid. It's still got Julie Stiles. There's still some similarities there. Alicia Vikander, who's hot press at the moment. She's been really good over the films last year. Generally speaking, it
looks... other ways too.
Yes, indeed. yeah. And, you know, generally speaking, it looks like it'll be great, to be honest. But you don't know anything about it, really. So it's very hard to know which direction they're going to take it in. I think if it feels newer in terms of the direction, it doesn't hang up on all what's gone before. I think that's maybe going to work better as a more standalone kind of film.
It's good that we don't know too much, though, because a lot of movies these days, the trailer's basically the flipping movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's the beef. Yeah, that's the issues we've had when we talked about Batman versus Superman and stuff. It's just way too much in your face and way too much of what's already going to happen. And what you don't like about it already. And yeah, you don't need that. I think it's better to keep it a bit of a mystery, just give you a bit of an idea of what's to come. But I think I'm sure it'll be great. I don't think they'll get it wrong.
Yeah, whilst obviously, like Neil said, they do have some worries just because it's something we love so much. I think I've got confidence it'll be good, like you say, Rory, because I think, as you say, they've had so many opportunities to come back and they always said they wouldn't unless the script was right. And I think Matt Damon was saying that the original films was so much of them was linked to the Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld era of politics. And I think they thought they didn't have as much they wanted to say. And I think now they've said they, funnily enough, with Neil mentioning it earlier on, in this like post-Snowden era, that sort of gave them, that's helped sort of ignite some more things they want to say about the world with this character. So I'm very excited, and I just hope if it's anywhere near as good as the first three, I'll be delighted. I think that's a good place to call this one a day. So if people would like to find, and I'm sure they would because you're just so good listening to you both. Thanks for coming on. If people would like to find more of your thoughts and more of your work, where would they find them, Neil?
Well, you can get me on Twitter. I'm at Burpleman. That's Burpleman. I know it's confusing for some people. My account is private, but if you send me a request, I will let you follow me. I'm not a complete dickhead. And you can get me on the box as well, as you said earlier. We try to make it bi-weekly, but it doesn't really work out that way. It's really not.
But it doesn't matter. It's quality all the same. That's the key.
It's quality, not quantity. Yeah. I recently hosted like a mammoth Breaking Bad one, which is it's really long, much to Gags' frustration, covering the entire Breaking Bad series. And then recently, there Gags and Cy was on because I was sick. I was supposed to be on, and they just had an update about what they were watching. And it's just general thoughts and chit chat, and you can get involved. And yeah, it's just basically all about coming together and talking about TV. So yeah, you can find me there. So that's On The Box.
I'll thoroughly recommend it to anyone listening. You know, they're all excellent, but I particularly enjoyed that Breaking Bad one. Obviously, it's a TV show that I really enjoyed, so it was great to hear that. What about yourself, Rory?
Yeah, we're probably quantity over quality, maybe.
No, not at all.
So yeah, we've done, I think, 10 or 11. Now we're up to on our comic bots, me and Stu, had Joe on this week talking about Batman vs. Superman preview, which was ace. And we've done The Flash and a load of good stuff recently. So, nice and fun. I'm still writing for AI, so I'm regularly kind of on there and do a bit of football in pods now and again. So yeah, I'm whoring myself around as always.
Some quality stuff. Lucky enough to be on the Batman vs. Superman preview pod. I had a great time, learned so much fun. On that. Oh, it was a good laugh, wasn't it? And
yeah.
Also, he's touched on it there. Rory's done a review of Deadpool, and I'd thoroughly recommend it. Where can I find Rory?
Yeah, it's on our Tumblr page. If you go to our AI Comic Pod account on Twitter, you've got our Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter accounts and all the rest.
You're much
of it.
More advanced than we are over on
Stu does.
He puts us to shame, doesn't he?
Well, we try a little bit, but I like to write, so it's my first kind of foray into writing about something else.
We find ways not to put out content, you find ways to put out content.
But it was nice to write a review, so I wrote a review on Deadpool, quite explicit review because that's what style of film it is, and I will be writing a little bit more on there, and I'm going to do some general film stuff when I get the time, which is rare, but I do love to write, so I will be doing some newer things soon.
Well, I look forward to that, and I thoroughly recommend that article and both these guys' pods. They're really good. Thanks to you both for coming on. Really enjoyed hearing your thoughts. And thanks to anybody who's listening. If you do have any feedback, it's always welcomed. Any suggestions for films also, always eager to hear that. Please, on Twitter, you can find me at joesimpson@wolf_ticketslfc. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.